Hello, Deborah. It's great to be talking with you.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, your debut novel, Tornado Weather, is out and deservedly getting great reviews. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you're a Fort Wayne native.
I am.
That is very near where your story takes place. So what inspired you to start here with your first bit of fiction?
Well, I think Indiana is a big part of who I am. It really helped shape my voice and my worldview. And so I wanted my first book to be an Indiana story. I'm an Indiana girl. I embrace the Indiana writer label. I'll take it. It's really been instrumental in shaping my writing.
The Kirkus Review tags the book Class, Race, and Natural Disaster Collide. So would you flesh that out just a bit for us?
Well, so I take on the lives of people who, to a certain extent, would be considered sort of disadvantaged. So I suppose that's the idea of class. Race, I take on the tensions in a small town between the quote-unquote native population and Mexican immigrants. And natural disasters, well, there's the tornado in the title, and it figures rather large in the story.
Indeed it does, and that makes for a good story. In your mind, Deborah, why did the story need telling?
Oh, that's a great question. One of the things that I've noticed in my time as a writer is that, in general, Midwestern lives tend to be overlooked to a certain extent in literature. At least that's been my experience. And I wanted to write stories of people who often are just kind of not considered fit for literature, is kind of what I've seen. You know, people refer to the Midwest as flyover country, and this idea that there's nothing to be seen here, there's nothing going on that's of interest. But in fact, I think there's a lot of drama and a lot of stories that need to be told from those perspectives. And so that was kind of my idea. I wanted to write a story about a town, create the tapestry of the town, use the lives of the people in those towns as the thread that kind of tied everything together. My goal was to kind of address lives that people think of as mundane or unimportant because they happen to be lived in a place that a lot of people consider, like I said, flyover.
That's a great point, and I think tapestry is a great way to describe the whole story itself and exactly how tightly and wonderfully you have woven it together. Very well put. Thank you for that. So your town of Colliersville, Indiana, is fictional, but its environs are real, up in the Spencerville zone and all the way into Fort Wayne. How does the storyline fit the location?
I think that a lot of small town Indiana has been in the news for economic difficulties, economic depression. When I was designing Colliersville as a place, I thought of Angola, Elkhart, Cherubusco, sort of these small towns that I visited as a kid and that I think suffer to a certain extent from the current economic environment. And so that was part of my decision to set the stories there, was just the economic issues that people who live in small town Indiana face on a daily basis.
That makes sense. Was the story, in fact, inspired by real life events in any way?
Sort of. All of my work is inspired to a certain extent by real life events. So one thing that inspired me to start this book was several years ago now, because I started this book in 2009, a laundromat owner, I believe in Fort Wayne, had put up a sign that said, "No Burmese, welcome." Originally, the book was going to deal with the Fort Wayne story, quote-unquote native Fort Wayne population, and the tensions between that population and the refugees from the Burmese community. I think that's something that's just so amazing that people don't know about Fort Wayne is the large Burmese refugee population. And so it was that sign that was in the laundromat that inspired me to start writing. In the end, I felt unqualified. I just didn't have the time I thought that was necessary to really tell that particular story. And so I changed kind of the dynamic to one that I thought was a little more universal across America, which is the tension between, again, quote-unquote native populations and Mexican immigrants that move here to work. That's kind of how that started. So to a certain extent, it is based on real events.
Indeed, and certainly timely.
Right.
So, Deborah, you've been a reporter, I have a feeling, a good one. Is the reporting skill set a permanent part of your fiction work, too?
Most definitely. I got my start reporting at a little community paper in northern Kentucky. And I think one of the greatest things I learned as a journalist at that time was how to get people to open up and talk to you, which you obviously have that skill. You ask the right questions. And so that was one thing that I really enjoyed about my time as a reporter, is just meeting all kinds of odd and interesting people with stories to tell. That just sort of lodged in my brain the folks that I met. met when I was working as a reporter, and I became, this sounds ridiculous, but like a connoisseur of odd people and their stories. That was something that really helped shape me as a writer. And then I think, too, conciseness. Reporting requires brevity, getting to the point. I'm not sure I really do that in my fiction, but I hope I do. And just discipline, too, that I think a lot of times people don't credit reporters enough with, but you have deadlines to meet. You have to sit down in the chair and work every day, or you don't eat. And I think that's a lesson I learned, too.
Quite insightful. So this story is a mystery at its core and a clever one, but it is, oh, so much more. Do you enjoy fusing genres, so to speak, to tell a good tale?
Oh, definitely. I'm a huge fan of mysteries, but I also really like melding the realistic with the unrealistic. So I have these figurines I keep on my bedside table when I write, and one is a very pretty little porcelain girl holding a bunny in a basket, very realistic little girl, and then one is a metal robot that kind of looks like Rosie from the Jetsons. And it sounds so strange, but I keep those on my bedside table to remind myself that I like to meld the realistic with the fantasy, because I think when you bring them together, you get at a deeper truth than you can get necessarily if you stick to one genre or the other. And so that's another thing I like to do. I think a lot of times people don't think of the Midwest as a hotbed of magic realism, but I kind of want to change that. I like bringing those two things together.
Good for you for having that philosophy, because after all, isn't life some of all of that?
Yeah, exactly. You can't really, I think, tell a whole story unless you bring in, again, some of the oddness, the weirdness, the inexplicable.
Great point. And I know it's every writer's dream, but are you surprised that Tornado Weather is receiving so many accolades already?
Yeah, I am so surprised. And it's true. You feel lucky just to have anybody read your work and understand what you're trying to do. I think that is such a privilege. And it's surreal because you spend most of the time just working alone in a room and you don't think any of your work is ever going to see the light of day. And to have complete strangers really understand what you're trying to say, it's incredibly thrilling and a privilege. And I'm not used to it. I just figured, you know, maybe my mom would read it. So it's pretty great. I'm really excited. And I'm really grateful to anyone who reads it, anyone who gives it a shot.
It is definitely worth a shot and more, I have to say, having read it. And I am curious, how do you think Hoosiers are going to relate to it?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I've had a few friends from college days read advanced copies, and they're from Indiana. I went to Hanover College, and so most of my fellow students there are from Indiana also, and they say I really nail certain aspects of their time in small town Indiana. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I hope they love it because I'm a Hoosier. I'm a proud Hoosier, and so I really, really want them to like it, to see aspects of their lives in it and their friends and their loved ones' lives. That's my hope. I would love it if I could get some Hoosier fandom. That would be kind of a dream come true also.
I have a feeling you'll have a lot of fandom, and certainly a lot of Hoosier fandom for the wonderful story you weave, but also you have painted a picture of this part of the Midwest in your book with words, and I think that's going to resonate with folks everywhere, especially Indiana people, and we'll see, like you said.
Right, I hope so, because it's home. It'll always be home.
I think it'll always be a part of your writing sensibilities too, it seems, and that's wonderful for you to carry forward.
Yeah, I might live in Portland, but I think I'll mostly write about Indiana.
I'm certainly not going to ask if you have a favorite writer in the whole world, but are there other Indiana writers that you do enjoy and respect and maybe even take inspiration from?
Well, I think I'll start with Michael Martone, who writes about Fort Wayne in a way that makes Fort Wayne the most fascinating place on the planet. And I think for those of us who are from Fort Wayne, you know, we agree it's a fascinating, weird, wonderful place. But there's something about what Michael Martone does with it just makes it leap off the page. And it becomes almost like its own country with its own language and folklore and way of being. And so I think Michael Martone is one of my favorite Indiana writers, and I study him. I love his work. And then I guess Kurt Vonnegut is a huge influence on me. I think he's so funny and yet so tragic at the same time. His work is just so wise. I read Slaughterhouse-Five probably every 4 or 5 years. I've taught it in my classes before. He's one of my favorites. And this is, I love James Whitcomb Riley. I don't care what anyone says. He's delightful. I love his poetry. My third grade teacher used to read it to us to kind of settle us down. And it worked. And I think he's lovely. And Gene Stratton Porter, of course, is great.
four amazing writers, and not only do I commend you for following such a good chain of authors, but certainly can see how all of those gifted and talented people have influenced your own writing.
It's in their voice, I think. Yeah, they have a uniquely Midwestern voice, and I find that really compelling.
I do have to ask, Deborah, and it sounds like your heart is always going to be with us here in the Heartland for your writing purposes, and that is wonderful. Now that you are living in Portland, Oregon, are those environs influencing some of your writing urges and ideas?
Yeah, in fact, I'm working on a novel right now set in the near future here in the Portland area after the really big one hit. I don't know if you saw that article that terrified everyone in the Pacific Northwest about the inevitable earthquake that will hit here at some point. And So I'm actually working on a novel that is set here. A lot of the characters, again, they're odd, they're weird, they're kind of based on my memories of Indiana more so maybe, but they're odd and weird people here too. Portlandia is a thing. And so, yeah, it is starting to influence me. And the landscape, there's majesty with the mountains, the oceans. There's something, too, I think, that grabs your imagination just about the beauty of the state.
Good luck on that. Of course, keep us posted on when that might be finished. And Deborah, I know you have lots to do getting ready for your book signing tour. Thank you for taking time for us today. It's been a real honor. So I'll say safe travels. And again, congratulations on a book well written.
Thank you, Julia. It's been my pleasure to talk to you today.